Welcome to the Zulu Time podcast, a straight talking conversation between two watch enthusiasts about the world of military watches. I hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to episode 84 of the Zulu Time podcast with your host Dan from Timely Underscore Moments. So I hope you enjoyed episode 83, which was an interview with Joe over at Stay Coded. He's a cool bloke. Obviously, go give him some support. And obviously, if you're not into Seiko mods or if you are looking at getting a Seiko mod, obviously, I'd encourage you to reach out to Joe because he's very knowledgeable and he's always willing to help. This episode, I have managed to get Justin from the Recon Team Watch Blog to come back on, mainly because we're going to discuss a very prominent topic for both of us, particularly obviously around the time of this episode as well, which is remembrance. And we're going to look at remembrance for obviously us in Britain and then compare it to obviously remembrance or obviously Veterans Day out in America. Justin, welcome back onto the pod, man. How are you getting on?
Hello, Dan. Doing good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, man. How have you been before we start? Because I know, and it's going to probably come into the wrist check, you've had a few new watches drop into your collection.
Yes, sir. I absolutely have. Yeah. So you want me to go ahead and start off with the wrist check?
Yeah, man. Of course. Guess first. Right.
Yeah. So today I've got on the Studio Underdog 01 is the model, and the reference is Watermelon. And that's going to be their chronograph that they've had out for a while. I've got it on a Waffle Dryden quick disconnect strap. Nice. It's been a really fun watch, really cool one to get.
It is a very summery watch. I feel that out in Texas, obviously, your weather's a lot better than mine currently because it's like winter has arrived early. The heavens have opened. There's been torrential rain. I'm suffering from a cold. From, as you can tell on the microphone, I sound a little bit more nasally. But, man, it looks like you are not only maintaining the summer kind of weather or the late summer weather in Texas, but you're also maintaining the summer watch vibes with that bright dial.
Yeah, trying to hang on to it for as long as possible because you know it's going to be a brutal winter here in the next month or two. But yeah, we just kind of been creeping into that cool autumn weather just recently in the last few days. But yeah, it'll generally stay hot until after about Halloween time frame. So a couple more weeks and we'll start easing into that cold weather. So but it's been fun. It's a real cool piece.
It is cool. And I didn't realize, I mean, I knew they were sought after. I know that obviously each one of his color renditions are limited, but I didn't realize how much of a cult icon really for Studio Underdog the Watermelon is and how sought after it is on the secondhand and gray market now.
Yeah, it really is pretty wild. You go and just have a look on eBay and you'll see flippers, you know, the scalpers of the market and the watch world that turn around and sell it for double or triple what it sells from Studio Underdog. So they're pretty sought after and, you know, just a smaller company. That's just kind of typically what will happen if they make something that's good and popular. You know, they don't have the fortitude or the factory to pump out 150 at a time. So they're only able to, you know, produce maybe 50 or so at a time. And then, you know, scalpers pop in there and scalp them up while they can.
Yeah. And I was fortunate to meet Richard a few times. I met him the first time, mate. He kind of like came on the scene just after, obviously, the success of the Watermelon. He came to World Time. And then more recently, I met back up with him very briefly in passing at the Red Bar event down in Brighton, the one which was all the British brands. And I've also seen, ties in very nicely to our overall topic, obviously, of military watches. He's done his own Studio Underdog kind of skew on the Dirty Dozen, which is quite cool.
Yeah, the model is called the Number Two. I like his styling, and it's very artistic all the way around, from the watch to the advertising to the naming. I mean, it's just O2 is the reference, and yeah, it's that atypical trench watch, if you will. Very similar to one of yours that you'll be discussing, or one of your new pickups, but just that very simple classic field watch with the, you know, minute tracking hand. That's pretty much it, or tracking, track, if you will, on the dial, but super simple. I really liked it. I'm definitely going to try and get one in black at some point, but really cool watches.
Yeah, very cool watches. Something like, I would say probably for him, a little bit left field, because he's known for color. He's known for chronographs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's where he started. And I think just a three-hander, no-date, very simple watch. And as we know,
very British watch,
very
too.
British,
I'll put
yes.
that very British watch, because we have talked about that quite a bit with just talking about military watches from the 1930s and 40s. And this very much has that British aesthetic to it that that I just enjoy. If you can't tell already, I mean, 90% of my watch collection is British watches. They're,
and I
they're
feel
just holding it down.
And I feel responsible for that, by the way. You know, just
you have put
you
me
know,
on, yeah. You put me on, and then it's just, you know, the rabbit hole just keeps going, and you just keep finding cool stuff. I mean, just, you know, if we were putting them up on an A, B, C, T, you know, tier, I think British watchmaking is up there. They're definitely throwing out some punches towards Switzerland for sure.
I would agree. I think especially in the price points, you know, I hate to use that term, but yes, you know, the price point that we're talking about here, I think, you know, your independent brands, your and then below them, obviously your micro brands in terms of, you know, Studio Underdog, I think the British market is just excelling at the moment. And I think, you know, and I'm not saying they haven't been excelling before. I just think more people across the wider watch fam, you know, the watch community, have kind of opened their eyes to it and started to collect those watches and look into those brands. And I obviously, being British, I'm here for it. I think it's fantastic, and I count myself very lucky to have close ties with a couple of those independent British watchmakers, which is great, you know. And obviously we're all here to support them. And what I like about them is, even though overall all the brands are, like you said, quintessentially British, you can kind of tell through various design cues, each of them brings something different to the table. And I think that's what's fantastic about it.
I think Seaward is a big one to touch on, that just kind of, you know, was in that micro brand scene, and then just over time making good watches and people catching on to them everywhere. I mean, I think that's probably one of the most popular British brands in the watch scene in the US anyways, is Seaward. That's what I see probably the most when it comes to British watches on American wrist, for sure.
Yeah, and I think with Christopher Ward, the benefit of not having being a direct seller, you know, via the internet to the customer, not having not having ADs, as it were, as well.
Yeah.
You know, and is of a benefit when, if you want to break an international market, if you're direct, you know, from, you know, direct selling company to the purchaser, I think that always helps, you know. And obviously, you know, there have been, you know, like I said, we spoke about it in the summer roundup, you know, for example, with Elliot Brown, we spoke about how they used to be direct to seller, and then obviously direct to contract with the military, and then obviously with the special project side. But then obviously they've gone now down this route with the Elliot Brown crew room, you know, and having a personal space. And now obviously they're pushing into their you know, their other independent ADs that they have had for a while, you know, that is clearly something that they have also got. But, you know, I think, like I said, with Christopher Ward pushing into America the way they have done over the last couple of years, it doesn't surprise me because of that direct state, you know, company to buyer kind of strategy. I also have a British watch on my wrist today, and it all comes as no surprise to you. So it is an Elliot Brown, and I'm hearing everyone groaning in the background. But if you've been looking at my feed, obviously by the time this airs in November, if you've been looking at my feed a few weeks back, but obviously for us at recording, it's real time. You would have seen that I took delivery of my Holton, which commemorates the 30th anniversary of the Royal Logistic Corps. It is a watch project that I led with Elliot Brown to basically commemorate that 30th anniversary. And you know what, mate? I'm really pleased with it. You know, I kind of, you know, let Alex work his magic on the design, as I always do. And for me, I just really was looking forward to getting a Holton on its bracelet back into my collection, because, as you know, I've not had a Holton on bracelet for a while. But bro, like, the best bit of this watch, it's the dial. Like, the dial is phenomenal. It's got this blue sunburst dial, and in some lights it looks black, it looks almost purple, and then some, man, it just catches that light and that the brightness and the sheen of the sunburst on that navy blue. It just brings that dial to life, and I think it's just a really cool watch. So very pleased with it. And I also have never had a Holton with the matte case finish, and I just think it looks really cool. You know, I think it's a
It's
lot
very
more,
crisp.
clean, as you were said. You described it as a clean looking watch, but I also think it's a little bit less obtrusive to, you know, the PVD cases. Some people would say that, you know, you can't always wear a black watch in every occasion, whereas I think you could probably get away with wearing this in more situations because of the fact that it's not DLC.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It looks killer. It's not brushed either. That's what's so cool. It's not a general brushed finish where it has some high polish on it, like most stainless steel watches are. That thing has got a really cool vibe to it. And I think that the vapor blastedness of it plays well with the way that the dial is done too, because it all goes together into one package. You know, sometimes they'll do a watch like that with a finish, bead blasted-ish finish, and then they'll do a super high gloss dial on it, and it doesn't mesh together. You know what I mean? Like the high polished stuff goes with the flashy stuff, but I think they did it well. I definitely
Yes, they
enjoy it.
did. Yeah, I'm really pleased with it. And, you know, it takes great photos. I like to think, you know, I can take an average photo at best, you know, just
100%. Yeah,
saying.
I've been
But
loving
I
them.
do like to think that it looks good in the product photography and the stuff, the poster I've put up. But I'll probably write up something to do with my time as a special project leader with Elliot Brown at some point before the end of the year. And that's obviously a very
Yeah, do a
quick.
little piece too. I think it would be cool to do a breakdown on that watch to explain to the regular guys who weren't RLC what each thing means in it, so they can see the nuances and the small details in the watch. Because I like, especially for me, somebody who's not highly versed in the British military world, like I obviously have you on FaceTime who breaks it down and explains it to me. But a cool little article to do, just kind of breaking it down, you know, the nuances in each little bitty part and the history that goes along with it. I think that would be badass.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool. And I think as well, I think just an overall kind of article will probably end up highly likely on the Recon Team Watch blog about just being a project leader with Elliot Brown, the process,
Yeah,
and
that'd
then,
be a
like I
great
said,
one.
utilize my projects, because obviously I can only speak about my projects really. And, you know, have some nuances on the design aspects of them as well. And I think it's important because, like you said, we see all these special projects, you know, out in the world, and not everyone who wears the watch necessarily knows every single small design nuance. And I think if you're gonna wear those watches, personally, for me, you know, knowing about all the fine details just brings that story to life. So yeah.
For sure.
I've also, by the way, before we move on to our main topic, I've taken delivery of a couple more watches. This month for me, man, has been a free watch month, which was unheard
Yeah,
of
you've had
for
them
a
coming
long
in,
time.
dude.
Yeah, so it was just down to the timing, really, on obviously postage. I didn't plan for it to be a free watch month, but I've taken delivery of a couple of vintage pieces as well, and we spoke about those. So very quickly, going to touch on those. I was really lucky to buy them both from the same dealer, a gentleman known as Adrian Halewood. Really nice guy, really big into vintage watches, and a really good bloke and member of the Red Bar UK, which is really nice. But bro, I managed to purchase of him a restored army trade pattern or army timepiece, which is the little white dialed issued watches from World War II. So for me, I like those because effectively the Dirty Dozen are great. Don't get me wrong, I think they're fantastic. You know, we all know the brands who did those and the companies that made those, you know, and obviously I've got, you know, the reissues of those, you know, thankfully, you know, through my connections with Don over at Vertex, and I think they're great. But let's be honest, the original watches are just a very hard to find in a good condition, and those that are in good condition are just extortionate amounts of money, you know, and it's just not practical. I don't personally believe it's feasible for me as a collector to put that amount of money down onto a vintage watch, knowing that I can now only really wear it as a dress piece. So I really like the ATPs because they're a lot more affordable. And actually, going off the numbers, bro, there are actually less ATPs were made than the Dirty Dozen watches. So they're actually rarer.
That's wild.
Which is wild. but for those who don't know about the ATPs, they were basically white dialed, sub-second watches. They had 15 jewel movements. Their timing accuracy was to be plus or minus 30 seconds a day. They had to be loomed, had to be robust, and had to be waterproof-ish. And I say ish because obviously waterproof-ish for our standards, but obviously waterproof for the standard of the day. Yeah. And they all range between 29 mil and 32 mil. So they're very small. We would consider them ladies' watches now.
That's a manly-sized watch.
It's a I'm going to agree with you. It's a manly-sized watch because I have small wrists. But I got a new one. I say new one. I've got an old one, but obviously new to my collection, to come in. And what's really cool is that it's actually a fully restored one. So it was obviously in really good condition in the first place, but it's actually been brought back as if, you know, it's been basically just restored aesthetically, and obviously it's had a watch service as well. So the best bit is, bro, is it glows in the dark. Like, it's got super luminova.
It's bright, yeah,
color matched to what it would have been as radium. And it's because of the service, it is actually running fast and within the original timing tolerances as stated by the Ministry of Defense.
Yeah, that's too cool. It's a great looking piece too, yeah. And we'll vibe on the small watches probably until we die. I don't think we'll hit any growth spurts any longer being after 30 years old, Dan. But I love the size of that watch, the loom, the paint on the dial looks so crisp. And having it side by side next to even your other vintage watch that you're about to discuss too. It just looks killer. It looks like something you can wear every day.
Yeah.
And being that it's stainless steel case too, that's a big plus with this watch, is it's not a plated case like a lot of them were. It's just gonna last you another 100 years. Like, that's gonna be something that your kids and grandkids can enjoy. It's super cool.
Yeah. And I actually forgot that point as well, obviously, that the originals were a mix of steel and brass plated. But that was also actually another reason why I wanted that one, was because it was steel. And I was just like, you know what? It's just a little bit more durable for my lifestyle. For sure. Not that, you know, I'm going to take that out and do absolutely mental things with it, but it's just nice to know that it's not going to look, you know, the chroming, as it were, the chroming plating is not going to wear in the time that I own the watch.
You could wear it rock climbing. You could wear it out to the pub. You could wear it to work. Yeah, and you're not going to be bothered to worry about chipping off that finish or anything like that. And it looks clean. That photo you did for your 12 year anniversary photo was badass.
I wore it, didn't I?
Yeah.
So guys, you've just bring this
congrats.
Up.
Congrats.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Yeah. Because obviously that ties in with our overall subject today, but guys, I actually managed recently, as of October, completed 12 years service in the army, and I'm hearing again groans in the background and people calling me out for being a crowbag, and that's absolutely fine, but yeah, bro, I've enjoyed my 12 years. You know, I've had more good times and bad times, and obviously we're going to talk about remembrance shortly, but yeah, to wear that watch, an original issued in 1940 watch, for my, you know, little profile photo that I did, portrait photo that I had taken for my 12th year in the army, was just a nice touch. It was just a little watch touch for me. But yeah, the fact
you
that you
the
picked
little
up on
pan
that
helmet, dude, the little 1917 pan helmet and a shovel on your waist, dude, you'd be fitting right in.
Mate, I'm an army photographer. I don't know what a shovel is, you know. But yeah, no, it's cool. Very quickly then, so the last watch that I picked up, and obviously we can just, you know, go on to a couple of the watches that you picked up, because there's one that I want to speak to you about, was a Flieger watch, effectively a pilot's watch. And again, from the same seller. Mate, it's the cheapest Amiga I've ever bought. I won't lie.
Bro, such a solid pickup.
Uh-huh. So, guys, I managed to pick up an Amiga 30T2, which is the movement. But effectively, this is the civilian version because it's not got the issue markings on the back. However, it is exactly the same as the one that is issued, which is quite nice. Pilot's watch, as issued to the Royal Air Force at the beginning of World War II. And it has a white dial. And it has got blued steel hands, which is fantastic, with Arabic markers numbered 1 through 12 on the dial, and it's 33 mil. Bro,
A
it's
great size Fleeger.
clean. It's
Everybody in
clean.
2023 needs to chill out with the 44 mil Fleegers, bro. It's driving me up the wall. Make us another 34 mil Fleeger, please. Somebody. Omega, if you're listening, come on.
The
I
fact
mean,
that
that thing
they've
is
not
such a
reissued
cool
that
watch.
watch, the fact that they've not brought that watch back out
Dude,
surprises me
it
because,
blows my mind. With modern technology, that they can make solid gold ones, bro, and they would fly off the shelf.
And like you said, it's such a nice watch because, yes, the size is akin to a dress watch now, I get it. But because it's a white dial with those blued steel hands, the legibility on that thing is
It's
phenomenal.
killer, and it doesn't look small. I feel like if it was a
No, it
black
doesn't.
dial, it would look smaller than it is, but the white definitely makes it look larger.
Exactly that. It reflects more light back out to you to see it, making the dial more legible. It's got a domed acrylic crystal on it, which obviously accentuates that, the brightness effectively, the
Yeah.
contrast of those hands against that white background, bro. Like, it's such a nice watch.
Super
Really
cool.
pleased I got it. Really pleased. And you know what? I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna say it on air. Vintage Omega represents such value currently in the watch market. And I get
Yeah.
it. I get it. It's all down to how much your money you're willing to spend. I get that there's minefields in terms of, have you got the correct watch? Have you got correct movement for the correct dial and all this stuff that we have with buying vintage watches. But as I said on my post when I first bought the watch on my Watch Crunch, it's all about being an informed consumer. And I believe that if you put in enough time to research these vintage watches, you know that you can pick up a good one, and there will always be people who will have the expertise and knowledge to fix it. And you know what? The
Yeah.
30T2 movement, bro, is one of the best movements Omega ever made. Like, and
Great
that's
looking
like
movement too,
that.
yeah.
I just want to quote that because that is from a watchmaker. I won't tell you what company, but it's from a very prominent British watchmaker, and he actually said that it was possibly it. He said it was possibly the best Omega movement that they ever made. If not, it is the best they'll ever make.
That's cool.
So yeah,
Yeah, that's
very cool
freaking
watch.
cool. Hand wind movement. It's intricate looking. Like, all those parts were handmade back then in the 1930s and 40s, and super cool watch. I definitely am I envy your pickup right there, because it definitely is something that you got a smoking deal on, and it's immaculate, you know. It's like one of those just dreams. Like you tell your buddy, like, dude, I can't believe I just scored this thing. Like, check this thing out, and it looks
Which I'm pretty
so
sure is
cool.
exactly what I said to you when I won it, because
Yeah.
guys, I put a bid on it in the last 4 minutes. It was on eBay, and I picked it up for a very good price, is what I'm saying. But bro, the other thing for me was I realized when that arrived, the only Amigas that I've got in my collection are all vintage.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah,
They're
I'm just
all
saying.
pre-1980s basically. You got a 70s, a 60s model, and then a 30, late 30s.
It was so that the 32-2 movement came in from 1939. So
Yeah, it's super cool. Now you just
very
need to add
pleased.
a 90s model, an 80s model, just pick up like every decade.
Bro, don't tempt me. Do not tempt me.
Yeah,
I want to quickly speak to you about the your GMT that you picked up, the Jack Mason again.
my shadow
Because
timer.
Yeah, because firstly, there was another release which we both agreed was close to the mark, but not quite hit the mark
Yeah, about
in the form of the
90%, I think.
no. But what I think is key, and what I want to talk to you about very quickly, is the movement inside that watch. So, how have you found owning the Citizen 9075?
9075. It seems good. It seems like a good movement. There's not really any rotor noise or anything like that. It winds smoothly. The crown action is good. I mean, it's probably got, I haven't looked at the specs, but I'm guessing about 36 to 38 hours power reserve, something like that. I did one little test, and it was running within 5, 6 seconds a day, something like that. I need to do another one and write it down and do like a full week to see what it's actually setting at. But It's been great, dude. It's a real cool movement. I haven't had any issues with jumping the dates, jumping the hours, anything like that. It's been running great. And I mean, they nailed that watch. They really did. The 48-hour bezel bi-directional is killer. Like, I'm not doing a whole lot of switching around just because I haven't been traveling a whole lot in the last, 2 months, but just being able to track, I mostly keep it at six on the top because I tracked, Zulu time for you guys, for you and Joe. So it's been real nifty to just be able to bam, know exactly what time it is there, not have to sit there and do math in my head or anything like that. But beautiful watch, man. The bracelet on it is something else. It feels right on par with, I mean, my Doxa quality wise, just talking quality wise, Tudors that I've handled, the same thing. Like, just everything feels crisp. It's quick detach, Jubilee. The screws in the bracelet are great. The finish on the bracelet's great. There's like 20 millimeters of adjustability on the quick adjust bracelet
Nice.
clasp. So that's really killer. If you're like AJ and you're diving and you got to pop that thing open real wide, you could do it pretty quickly. But yeah, definitely killer. I was really excited for that Dr. Pepper watch. I'll say that for sure I was. Yeah,
I mean,
and
don't
the
get me
reason
wrong, like
why.
it's still a nice looking watch. I just think, as we
Yeah.
discussed it, there were just a few little things that we agreed that we would have changed that probably would have brought
Yeah.
the Dr. Pepper the Dr. Pepperiness of the watch
Yeah.
out a little bit more.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I wouldn't say I don't like it. I would say that I like it as much as I like my espresso, maybe a little bit less, but definitely it's one of those things where I'm like, well, I already have this espresso and it didn't blow me out of the water. I think that for me, just personal taste, my perfect Dr. Pepper Stratatimer would have been a cream and maroon bezel with the opposite in the 24-hour markings, and then a maroon dial with a cream GMT hand. So that would have been like my, I'm buying this, I don't care what anybody says, I'm gonna pick this up and I'll have two Stratotimers, whatever. But the red and maroon just didn't really nail it for me. So yeah, when because I had planned on buying it, and then they finally released a full picture of it, and I was just kind of fighting that feeling like, I don't think this was for me. But I love it. I love that, excuse me, that companies are collabing and doing fun stuff like that for sure.
And that's the point, though, isn't it? Is that I think all of these independent watch brands that we've spoken about, I think in their own ways and their own different differences, are bringing fun back into watchmaking, and I think
Yeah.
that's the great bit about, independence. I stand by it as well. When we spoke in the summer roundup episode, I think, next year the 9075 movement, as well as the Seiko NH34 movement, will
Yep.
bring a lot of accessible GMT watches into the market, and I look
For
forward
sure.
to
And
it.
they're two different ones, right? So like the 34 is a collar GMT, right? But it's like an affordable one that is now available to the mass market. And I guess that usually works out where it's like the year after they release it is when they start producing the non-Seiko branded quote unquote ones. So yeah, I think it'll be cool to see. I'm curious as to like what companies are going to be throwing these in their watches. Which one will they choose? And is the Flyer GMT really a game changer, if you will? Because for me personally, having both, a standard collar GMT and a Flyer GMT, I feel like if I traveled more, the Flyer, no, like hands down, it's just better. It's just so much faster with setting dates, setting the hour. I think it just everything, every aspect about it kills the collar GMT. Now, for the people who don't travel often and who are just trying to maybe just track the 24 hours of their day, I think you're fine. I don't think it's a complete killer. And I don't know what the price point difference is going to be. I can tell you already right off the bat, I think the NH34 is going to come in $20, $30 cheaper than the 9075. Maybe at the end of the day, I don't know where those two price points stand, but I think the Seiko will end up being in more watches than the 9075. But I'm definitely stoked to see what they come out with for sure.
Yeah, it will be interesting. And I think, like you said, I think not only will I think the movements will be on par, very similar. Like you said, when these companies are buying them in bulk, you know, it'll be very similar. I think it'll probably boil down to is the watch houses themselves and how many they'll produce non-branded in order for companies to buy them. You know, but as someone who does travel, and I say travels a lot, I like to think I travel fairly often. But I think for me as a watch guy now, it doesn't matter which movement's inside them because I, as a watch person, will travel with multiple watches. So for me, if I have to take an extra couple of minutes to set it when I get to the country that I'm in for that period of time, it doesn't really bother me. However, I would say if I was a frequent flyer, you know, like these, you know, businessmen who fly every other
Businessman, yeah,
week
flying
or
back
every
and forth
week,
from
yeah,
EU to
constantly,
USA,
yeah, then I can understand why you would have the flyer over a Caller GMT. So yeah, I just wanted to, you know, just speak to you about that because look, you've had that now for a while. That new release that we discussed was still pretty interesting, and you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, clearly future GMT watches.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, right, Justin, I've brought you on, mate, to actually talk about Remembrance Day because you know, me being serving, you obviously ex-serving. Remembrance is quite important for both of us, and I believe as well for our overall communities outside of the watch fam. You know, in terms of our military service, Remembrance is important. I think within the military watch collecting scene, it's very important because you know there are you know examples like we spoke about earlier, picking up these older watches that potentially have done stuff or potentially have been on the wrists of people who have done stuff or just being around at those times, it makes people of the modern day collector feel connected to something in the past, right? And I think that's important for, you know, the past to be remembered. I think it's important for, you know, those, you know, our forebears, for want of a better expression, to be remembered and remember correctly. But I have no idea how you, as an you know, as an ex-serving US Air Force airman, actually went around your time in terms of remembrance. So I don't know what you guys do in the US Air Force. I know you obviously also call it Veterans Day in America, and
Veterans
that is
Day.
obviously a big difference for us. Is for us it is Remembrance Day. We don't have a Veterans Day. We have Armed Forces Day, which is a different thing, which celebrates our armed forces and our
That's like
current
our
serving.
Memorial Day. Yeah, so we've got both as well. We just call them different things.
So I would probably say from a non-American that Remembrance Day is closer to your Memorial Day, I would probably say. So yeah, but I just want to know, what do you guys do, you know, at that time of year? Like I said, you know, like I said, remembrance is important for us. You know, I remember people who served with me. I remember a particular individual who I went to school with who unfortunately ended up, you know, becoming KIA in Op Herrick. He's actually in the news, not only just because obviously all of them at some point because of the unfortunate, you know, incidences, you know, that you know they died in got into the news, but he actually his dog he was a dog handler, and his dog actually got the PDSA medal, which is the animal version of the Victoria Cross, which is our highest gallantry award. So you know I went to school with someone of you know who did that, which is you know pretty out there, you know. But I just wanted to know, from your point of view, what does Memorial Day, Veterans Day mean to you, and what do you guys do for it?
Yeah, Veterans Day for me personally is right along those lines is also remembering those who have died, remembering my brothers and sisters who are still serving, and remembering those who have gotten out and continuing their life on a different wavelength now. But yeah, pretty big for me, like kind of same thing. Guy in the news when I was stationed back at Eglin Air Force Base, I did some time at the 5th Ranger training camp where they do their woodland training there at Camp Rudder. And we had a Special Forces member, Tech Sergeant Timothy Officer. This was August 3rd, 2015. He was doing a high altitude free fall jump with some other TACP guys, which is Tactical Air Control Party. For those who don't know, they basically call in airstrikes, and they're pretty much in charge of the tactical air working space around where they're doing missions. But so they're doing a free fall jump, and two guys collided head to head. imploding their fast helmets into their heads, you know, bad, worst case scenario thing. He ended up succumbing to his wounds. But Veterans Day for me, like, real big for me is remembering those guys. So, like, yeah. Remembering him, he had two Bronze Stars. He joined in 2001 and was in the initial fight against terror after 9/11. Mm-hmm. So remembering those guys who paved the way for us, those who came. I joined the military in 2011, September to be exact, and basically supporting those guys who came up before us, supporting the guys who are still doing it today. And just really, you know, like, let my kids know, hey, this is what we're remembering. This is why we're doing this. This is why we do this. And that's kind of been how it is. You know, obviously, when I was in the military, it's completely different now. But when I was in, it was more of a getting together with the guys. So
yeah.
Somebody would host a barbecue at their house. And that's so if we were on duty as a fireman, we would all the family would come to the station.
Yep.
We would do a big grill out there, you know, barbecue, all that stuff. If we were off, we'd be drinking beers, playing, you know, beer pong and getting wild, but just really having a good time together, sharing stories. That's a big thing too, you know, that I definitely enjoyed when I was in, is just chatting with the other guys and just kind of remembering what we're here for, why we're here, you know, and all that fun stuff. So.
Nice. Do you guys on your, you know, you clearly obviously you guys had, like, you know, barbecues and family gatherings and, you know, be with your team, for want of a better expression, you know, over some drinks, you share your stories. For us, you know, we do similar things. We don't necessarily do the barbecue though, bro, because the weather's awful in November. But you know, guys get together, you know, families will come together potentially, you know, depending on if they're a military family or not. But like for me, growing up, you know, I come from a military family. My father and my uncles all served for a very long time. And for us, on Remembrance Day was always started with the Remembrance Church Service, you know, and, you know, I know there's guys out there who are, you know, we will leave religion at the door for this, but obviously Remembrance Services are very important in, I would say, in British tradition. You know, it's that whole 2 minute silence. It's, you know, the various elements of that, it's laying of wreaths and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you see it all across Britain. You know, and it's one of the few times where you'll see, you know, the local community come out. You know, you'll get local, you know, local community will come out, you know, with their padres or their, you know, priests or whatever. They'll do these remembrance services, normally at a war memorial, because obviously every village, every town, every city has war memorials, you know, to World War One and before and World War Two and all that stuff, with all the names of those who fell on there. We lay wreaths, there's 2 minutes of silence, you have your last post and the pipers and all that kind of stuff that you think about, you know.
Right.
But for me, bro, like, you know, some of my earliest memories of Remembrance Day is always that. It starts with that, and then obviously because it's on a Sunday, then obviously we're being British, we'll probably come home and have like a roast dinner, right? That's kind of how we do it. As I've, you know, I've gotten older and I've, you know, served, I still do that. You know, for me, it's not just remembrance of those who came before, but for me, it's remembering those traditions within my own family. And I do that side of it. So I have quite a quiet Remembrance Day, I guess, really, in compared to others. But now, obviously, I'll also have a couple of drinks, especially if I'm on at service with colleagues. You know what I mean? A particular Remembrance Day that I remember, though, bro, was one growing up when my father was posted in Belgium. And there's a cemetery, and I'm not even going to pronounce it because I would butcher the name of the cemetery, but I'll put it in the show notes. And it is a unique war cemetery, like war grave cemetery, because it's the only World War One cemetery which is half Allied or half British and half German forces in the same cemetery. So you've got the white headstones that you think, you know, similar to, you know, the photos that I've seen at, you know, Arlington and all that kind of stuff for the British. And on the other side, bro, you've got slate, so black slate crosses, but they're not stood up, they're laid down in German cemeteries. I never knew that before going there. So you imagine that, the contrast of loves, you know, light and dark and up and down.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is particularly for that cemetery as well, not only is it the only mixed cemetery, it also has the first recorded death of World War One for the British. It
Oh,
has
wow.
the first Victoria Cross winner of World War One, and it has the last soldier on record to be killed in action during World War One. And
Wow.
through chance or happenstance, the first and the last soldier are buried opposite each other.
Oh, wow, that's crazy. That's probably a really, really interesting place to go visit in person. Yeah, that's really cool.
And for me, bro, I remember we were there and I don't know how cold it was. I have no idea how cold it was. I just remember it being cold, wet, miserable, and raining, right? So we'd
Yeah.
done the church service as a family with the community, you know, because obviously everyone out in Belgium is clearly of a military descent, because obviously a family member was serving. We then went from the church service remembrance to the cemetery to lay wreaths, right? And they actually had a local historian come with us to the last bit of the ceremony, and he took us around the grave and he pointed out the first soldier to die, the last soldier to die, the Victoria Cross winner, and he had all the notes. You know, he told us the stories about these individuals, and then took us into the German side, and then picked out some prominent soldiers buried for the German side as well. But we'd invited at the time veterans from World War One. And I remember, bro, there was a French soldier there. He was about 101 at the time. Okay. He's sat in his wheelchair. He's got his little blanket over his legs, you know, to keep his legs warm. He's got a big coat on. And the person who's behind him now, I don't know to this day whether it's a family member who was younger or just, you know, like a carer, for want of a better expression, was just holding an umbrella over him, you know, see, you know, because he's too old to hold it himself. And I remember going up to him with my dad, you know, just to speak to him, you know, just want to know who he was, how old he was. And I guess it's similar, really, just asking, like, you know, what's remembrance like for him. And I remember the translation came back about his time in World War One, and he laughed at my dad and he said, "It's funny how all of you are shivering because it's cold." And he went, "I don't shiver anymore." He went, "Because the coldest I've ever been was in 1917, and I
Yeah,
still
I'm sure
remember it."
those trenches were cold as shit. Oh my God.
But
Soaked to
how
the
mental
bone.
is that? Like, mentally, this guy, bro, was still, you know, active, as it were, you know, and very coherent. His body's obviously of a 101-year-old, you know, and he was sat there, mate, and he's just like in the rain, not cold. He's just like, "The coldest I've ever been
Couldn't be
was in
bothered. He's like,
1917.
light him up a cigarette, bro. He's good to go.
Yeah,
Yeah,
absolutely
that's
crazy,
wild,
man.
man. That's
You
cool.
know.
Yeah, I mean they're a different breed, bro. Like especially, I mean, I think the last breed of guys was like the Korean War, you know, like that was the last like real breed of just hard ass dudes. And it just seemed to have gotten, you know, not everybody is soft, you know, after that, but you can tell just like everybody in that time frame was just cut from a different cloth, man. That's crazy.
I mean, not to go too far away from the whole remembrance thing, but you know, this is just on the military term now. But I think that you've necessarily targeted it correctly. You have, in the fact that before Korea, the way we fought wars was basically the same as we fought all the wars before. The only difference was we had firearms, right? You know, and yes, I know people are going to go, "Oh, yes, well, you know, there was other technological advances with air power and all that kind of stuff." And I get it. Yes, there was, and it was a rapid, expansive, you know, technological jump from World War One to World War Two. But you know, it hadn't really changed, you know, until effectively just after World War II, with the unfortunate or fortunate, depending on your side of the fence that you look on it, you know, creation of the atomic weapons, you know. But all the wars since then are relatively small, you know, compared to
And more
World War
conflicts,
II,
yeah,
right? And
than these large scale 2,000 man versus 2,000 man, you know, trench warfare where you just charge at each other over and over again and then blast each other with artillery. Yeah, it's completely different.
You know, and also, you know, conflicts now, modern day conflict, is very localized. You know, it is, you know, whether you look at it, whether you di agree or disagree. I'm just looking at it on wide scale. You know, you think about World War II, where you had the Pacific, campaign. You had the African campaign, you had the Italian campaign, you had the European campaign, then you had the Atlantic, you had, the naval bit and then the air. Like, that was a world war. Whereas you look at modern day conflicts, the time that we joined them, they were localized to a individual, the actual conflict itself.
Yeah,
Yes,
one
the
country, yeah.
One country. And yes, we know that there was funding from other nations, because we know that there was, but the actual conflict, where you've got guys facing each other off in various situations, as it were, or guys going in to do what they were going to do, is very small and localized compared
Yeah,
to the scale
definitely.
of warfare before,
Yeah.
But no, it's interesting, bro. Like, do you guys in the US Air Force do you like Remembrance Services then as well when it comes to Memorial Day and
We
Veterans
do
Day?
Memorial Day, yeah.
Yeah.
That's just the other holiday, basically. It's the same thing, Memorial Day. Yeah, we think about everybody who's passed away and who's given their life up, made the ultimate sacrifice. That's definitely a Memorial Day for us. Very similar, yeah.
And like, in terms of your community now that you're obviously, like I said, now that you're not serving anymore, is that something that
Yeah.
your local community will still do something for those days, or is it
Yeah, my
just some, or is
pastor
it
at my
like
church,
the, yeah.
he's ex-Navy, so like my pastor's a veteran at the Baptist church, so yeah, we do stuff like that on Memorial Day, so yeah, still definitely go strong.
Nice. I think it's right and it's correct to do so. And like I said, this episode will air just before Remembrance Sunday for us out in England. So, I'm sure over the weekend, after people have hopefully listened to this episode, people will be going off to remember in their own ways. Bring
Yeah.
it back to watches. Do you believe or do you think that the interest in military watches, particularly the vintage military watches, do you think that in a way that forms a method of remembrance for certain collectors?
Yeah, it's something tangible. It's something that you hold in your hand and you can kind of connect with whatever human being had come before you. Yeah. I think that definitely goes right along with that, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's similar to collectors with medals, I suppose, and
Yeah,
uniforms and all that kind of stuff.
100%. Yeah.
But no, like I said, guys, obviously, you guys can remember in your own way. Me and Justin just wanted to have a chat about, certain individuals who have been in our lives, be it military or before in my
Yep.
case. And just highlight the different ways that you can remember and obviously, the importance of it. In terms of something that I will highlight now, it is a little bit late, obviously, by the time this episode has aired. However, I'll put him into the show notes as well. There's a guy called Matt. He's over at Batmat Creations. If I've butchered that and got it wrong, I'll put it in the show notes. But he is currently, bro, a bit of an artisan tinkerer, maker of things, I would say. And he has been making poppies out of World War One and World War Two era pennies. And he's cut the poppy's shape into the penny, and then he has cut the ends off 303 caliber brass, and he's obviously welded them together to make poppy pins for remembrance. So no doubt he's going to be busy making these, obviously in time for remembrance and all that kind of stuff. And no doubt he'll continue to make them into next year. But if you guys haven't seen his work, please go and support him. Like I said, I'll put him in the show notes. I've bought a few of them for my own family. And I just think it's a really cool thing to get behind. And it raises money back to the charities that support veterans. And I believe that is important to do so. So it raises money back to the Royal British Legion. And it also raises money to current serving British military by splitting the donations between the Royal British Legion and SAFR, which is the service. The Service Families Association, effectively. I've also butchered that, but effectively, it's the oldest tri-service military charity for Britain, which is really good. So yes, go check that out. Support him, and obviously buy a poppy. Effectively, there you go. I've told you, go buy a poppy. I think we've covered Remembrance pretty well off. Is there anything upcoming towards the end of the year, Justin, for the recon team watch block?
Got some cool articles that are going to be airing here in the next 2 weeks, and then throughout December, just some cool articles that'll be airing. So that's pretty much it with me. Some stuff from me, some stuff from the contributors and whatnot. Yeah.
Yep, I've so for us at the obviously the us or me at the Zulu Time podcast, we've got the Christmas episode. So I will be doing a joint episode with a couple of guests where we're going to talk about a summary of the year, looking forward into 2024 for all things watch fam, all things watches, and looking at what we guess is probably the best way to describe, or
Yeah.
hope is also probably
Yeah.
another accurate word for obviously what's going to happen in 2024 with watches, releases, and companies. And we're also going to tell you about some of the upcoming plans that we have for our various basically content creation for watches. So
Yeah.
that might give you a clue as to who I have asked to join me on the December
Yeah.
episode. But then I will take the standard station break over the back end of December into early January, as I always do, basically so that you guys can also enjoy your time off. So that'll be good. But very quickly, bro, you mentioned your submissions for the Recon Team Watch blog and your articles. Is it too soon? Can I mention the article that I've written?
Go
Or
ahead.
okay, cool. So the article that I've written, and we're waiting for the imagery. It's literally, I'm still waiting for it. The guy's really busy, but effectively, when I went out to Cyprus, I managed to get my Alpha 13 Alpha chronograph, my A13A. I got some airtime, bro, while I was out there. And not just airtime, as in I flew to Cyprus wearing it, because obviously that did happen. I didn't fly back from Cyprus with it because I left it in country for a little bit, because there's a particular individual who was so kind to allow it to be flown in a U2,
Yeah, that's super cool.
which is really cool. So I've done a review article about the watches, tying in a little bit about Alpha 13 Alpha or A13A's connections with the U2 Dragon Lady community. And I will also be putting in some photos of my own watch at altitude, which is really cool. So
Heck
I
yeah.
hopefully you'll look forward to that article. I'm really looking forward to it being published because, bro, I still don't even know what these photos look like. So I'm hoping they're
Yeah,
good. You know what I mean? I'm
I'm
hoping they're good.
excited.
I'm sure they are good. They're good because I've seen imagery taken from that platform, in terms of like, selfies and all that kind of stuff, that
Yeah.
occasionally does get out from that community. And every time they do share those kind of images, I'm always blown away because I don't think people realize how high 70,000 feet is until you see
It's
it in
high
an
up,
image.
yeah.
But yeah, and the fact that my watch has gone there, I think it's fantastic, and it ties back in with the special project that Paolo did for the U2 community, which is really cool.
Super cool.
Moving on then, so before anything else, bro, that we you feel like you've missed on remembrance, anything about the Recon Team Watch blog that people need to know about before we move on to closing notes?
No, I think I covered it all. Yeah, I think we're good.
Cool, happy days. Justin, you are my guest. What closing note do you have for the audience today?
So my closing note is going to be One Piece, a Netflix live action series that was done based on the anime. Really good show. Get out there and watch it. I watched it all in like 2 days' time. So really good one.
Was it so it's on my list of series to watch because I've got a couple of series that I'm kind of slowly getting through at the moment. But do you feel as a live action? So I mean I've watched a few other anime to live action films and series as well that I think are quite good. Do you feel like this is on par with the original? You know what I mean? Like, could people
Yeah, I
realistically
think
just
it's pretty
watch the
similar.
live action
Yeah.
and kind of say that's them? Or do
Yeah,
you
I
feel
think it's
that this
very
is
similar or
they need to
similar
watch the
enough.
do they
Yeah.
need
Yeah, I think it's
to get an
similar enough where
understanding?
they'll still enjoy it.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
So to get an understanding, they'd have to, maybe have a little bit more of knowledge for the anime as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I will add it. Well, I have added it and I will get around to watching it. Hopefully, bro, over my December leave, I'll
Yeah.
finish it. and letting you know my thoughts. Because I know that One Piece has been going on for like 27 or maybe even 30 odd seasons, hasn't it? Like in terms of an anime. So
Yeah, there's a bunch.
there's a lot of media there for the writers and Netflix to actually get into, which is quite good. I've got a few shout-outs as a part of my closing notes. So very quickly, I just want to shout out the Analog Explorer podcast. AJ sent me over a care package. Not that you guys can see what I'm showing Justin right now, but he sent me a really cool coin. And that will be featured in obviously posts on the Timely Moments page. And then I also want to shout out I also want to shout out Citadel Threads. So Citadel Threads is run by a gentleman called Matt. And Matt is very good at designing badges. And he was kind enough to take on my latest version of the Zulu Time podcast patch, which I'm really pleased with. I did a small run with him. And effectively, it's the first full color patch that Zulu Time Podcast has had. And it is based off the originals. I say the original. It's based off the fourth version of the patch and based off the subdued flag. But obviously, it's a full color flag, which is really cool, with a bit of tiger stripe because I like tiger stripe and because I can. So those patches are going through the current patches. They have already been sent out to a few recent guests on the podcast, but I just wanted to shout out the patches and Matt over at Citadel for doing the patches for me. And like I said, guys, if you want to get in contact about the patches, effectively, you kind of have to be a guest on my show or potentially a very close friend within the Watch fam, and we will get you a patch. But yes,
Yeah, the
so
new patches are sick.
they are cool, aren't they? I'm very pleased with them, bro. I was just trying to explain to the audience that it's the first full color patch, which is really nice.
Yeah.
It's the design that I'm going to stick with for a while, I think, because I really like it. But yeah, Matt did a incredible job with that patch. And then finally, my actual closing note is a book series by the author Jeffrey Archer. So Jeffrey Archer writes a lot of crime fiction, and a bit of murder mystery and all that kind of stuff. Very good writer. But I'm going to tell you not to buy the book. I'm going to tell you that you have to go on to Audible and get the audiobook because the narrator for the audiobook is fantastic. And he really
Okay.
brings, like, the books, I would get through the books very quickly anyway. But like the narrator brings these stories to life. Okay, so the story series of Jeffrey Archer that I want you to go out and get or look at least is called the William Warwick series. Okay, so the William Warwick series, and it follows a policeman called William Warwick throughout his entire career, from joining as a police constable and finishing as the commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. Okay. And it ties in all these various different cases throughout his career, okay, as well as his personal life, his family life, as well as also a really good kind of overview of what it's like for lawyers effectively to do the whole prosecution and the defense, and just the way it comes to life. Jeffrey Archer's clearly done his work and his research before writing these books really well. Okay, so the first book of the series is called Nothing Ventured. Okay, and it centers around a young policeman, PC William Warwick. So he's literally his first case. Okay, and he effectively has to deal with and put together the case against effectively one of Br England's biggest art heists in the 1970s. Obviously, it's all fictitious and clearly based upon other real crimes have happened. But the other good thing about it, bro, is the fact that because it's based in London and like in England, Jeffrey Archer has clearly gone to all these places as well, because his description of these places, all right, I know it's set in the late 70s into the 80s and onwards, but like those places actually exist. And his, you know, just the way he describes what it's like to, I don't know, for example, get on the London Underground at a certain time, you sit there and kind of go, you've done this, you know, and it just
That's
brings it all to
cool.
life. So yes, go check out the William Warwick series, starting with the book Nothing Ventured. So there you go.
Nothing venture.
nothing ventured. Guys, I hope you look forward to our next episode, which will be an interview episode with a particular company. I will say nothing more. And then after that, obviously, the Christmas episode. And I say nothing more, by the way, about the interview episode because I've had a response on my email. So it's all going to plan. You guys are going to love it. And I think it's going to be one of the... A nice way for me to end the year before looking into the Christmas episode of the standard Christmas gift idea episode, effectively. So yeah. It's a really good interview to finish the year with. Some really cool watches will be spoken about. And that's really all I've got for you. So guys, until that episode, take care and I will catch you in the next one. Bye.
Take it easy.